Tashigaki Ta! Welcome to another episode of the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. I'm your host today, Michael Thomas. Joining me is Wabam Entertainment's own animaniac, Isaac Wolf.
Hello.
Joining Isaac and I today, our friend from Revenge of the Fans, the Scarlet Speedster himself, Brandon Alvarado.
What's up, peeps?
Today we're going to be talking about anime, specifically anime adaptations. We're going to start with Attack on Titan. They have a new live-action movie coming to the United States. It's in the early development stage. They don't even have a writer yet. But it's going to be directed by the director of It. So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think it's perfect choice of a director because you need the horror elements to be the focus on the story. It's because, to speak of the Japanese live-action adaptation that I roasted on this show, those that should burn in... calm down, Isaac, calm down. because they should be focusing on the horror elements about the humans trying to fight and survive against these horrific creatures. My only issue is, because this is a movie that needs to be R-rated, because you need to show how the whole scenario looks, the world looks, and all that jazz. But if you have an R rating, you aren't so the students aren't so keen with doing that high of a budget. Granted, this is a big IP, so maybe they are a little bit more keen on giving it. But I can't see how a Attack on Titan movie can work with a 75 million budget. I see 100 to 125 at least, at minimum, so to speak. And that's my biggest concern is, are they going to go full blockbuster at PG-13 or should it go R and more low budget and it will look fake and all that? I think you get my point, but I'm extremely happy about it because I think they chose the right director, and with the right writer, this could be something unlike those pieces of... calm down. Brandon, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's being that it's a big IP, and being, I think it's an IP that stands alone in the way, especially in anime right now. I think the biggest interesting thing about it is that it's popular in spite of its emphasis on gore, death, war, you know, which are topics that nobody really enjoys. But the way it uses that to tell the story is what makes Attack on Titan very unique. And you cannot make that story work unless you use those elements the way the manga and the anime uses them. So I think you're right, the budget needs to be there. But like you said, I think I can agree with you 100%. I think Andy Muschietti is a great director. And I think mostly because you can tell, especially It Chapter One, he's very good with practical effects as well.
Yeah.
So it's not all CG, like it's CG where it needs to be, but he's very good with practical effects as well. So whenever he uses them in the It movie, they look excellent. And he never allowed the horror element to be distracting from the actual story that he wanted to tell. Because I think that's one of the things that made that movie work is that it's a horror movie, but it still is quote unquote a children's horror movie. You know what I mean? It's not really a horror movie for adults. Now, of course, Attack on Titan is not a kid's story. This is a horror movie, a horror war story, just filled with 60-foot people that eat other people. But if they're able to capture, I'm gonna be honest. If they're able to capture the essence of that story and the sense of mystery, and the gore, I think it can work. But I think the biggest challenge, more than budget and effects, I think the biggest challenge that they face is that being that the story is so dense, I really struggle with the idea of how they make this work without trying to make the Full Metal Alchemist mistake of putting everything in one movie.
I think they could do something on the line of Bleach. More in, I could see them do more like that. They were a bit more compacted and they focused on the beginning. I think that's something they could do as well. And Bleach is a pretty big story. Also, let's not forget that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But and like you said, I think you hit it right on the nail. But the problem that I think my major concern is. The problem that a lot of times American filmmakers face when they don't have the right support or they're not giving the liberty to do things in a way that will work is that they stuff so many things because they don't know if they'll get another chance to continue the story. And this is one of those stories that they have to double down on the idea that whether we get a second part or not, we got to try this and present this as a part one. Like, this doesn't work as a standalone. It won't work. Because it won't, unless you disregard certain elements completely, it won't work as a standalone move. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be constructed as a part one. And it's one of those stories that, depending on how it works, I prefer that unless there's a commitment from the studio to do more than one, they shouldn't even do it at all. And I think that's the biggest challenge that the movie this faces.
The David Heyman has spoken before about his interest in doing the Attack on Titan, and he seemed to have a bit of a passion for that IP. So I don't think they're going to act like it's going to be one movie, so to speak. I think they are going the Bleach route. That would be the best route.
I really hope they do. Now, do you think, being that you mentioned the Bleach route, do you think this movie will probably work better if they do a straight to Netflix movie, so that way they have more opportunity to do sequels? Or do you think this should be a movie that we should see in theaters?
Theaters, and that will that's what they were. They're only going to put it on Netflix in case it's going to be another show, or what Holmes and Watson, or what was that latest Paradox movie? Netflix seems to be the dumping ground right now, so that's the only way this will end up in Netflix before it ends up in the cinema. Mike, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. The story is very dense, and the worst thing any movie can do is try to compact a season or two seasons worth into one movie. I just watched The Last Airbender last night, which that review is probably going to be up by the time this podcast is posted, and it suffered from the same problem.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you watched the movie that I turned off in the first 20 minutes.
It's so bad.
I think you could, with a story like this, I could think you could do like fourth of the season, something like that. You don't need to do the entire season. Do something like split the season up into movies themselves, so to speak.
But that goes back to what you guys were saying before. Yeah. How do you know you're going to get a sequel? You have to get that commitment from Warner Brothers. They're the ones making this, right? Warner Brothers?
Yes, Warner Brothers. And the producer was rather committed, so I think they do have a plan, and I do think they know that this is a popular IP, so I don't think they are going to act like this will be just a one movie.
Right.
And you know what, now that you mentioned that, it wouldn't be the first time that Warner Brothers actually approves a series from the get-go, because I think that's pretty much the way it went with the Kenshin movies. Like, I think they were planned as a trilogy for the start. Now, keep in mind, these are 3-hour movies each, but they work well because they were designed as a trilogy. And I think it captures the essence of the whole series very well.
Yeah.
So I think that's what, like, I think I've said it before. I think the Kenshin movies are one of the best adaptations you'll see anywhere. Like, it's really, really good.
And it's Warner Brothers that did that one. They did the Live, Die, Repeat, which is basically...
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow. Oh, sorry. It's called Edge of Tomorrow. The original...
It's got a million names.
Yeah, the original source material is called Live, Die, Repeats, which is a visual novel, aka manga. And they also did the Wolf Brigade movie. So I think Warner Brothers, even though all of them isn't the American division, has the best track record of anime and manga movies. So I'm sort of positive towards this movie.
Yeah, the one thing about Attack on Titan, that is a movie that can work in a Western style.
Yeah.
You look at something like Dragon Ball, you can't make that work. It just won't work.
No. Unless you have some director that is like a mixture of Zack Snyder with his action style and some comedy like Taika Waititi. You need a director that's a mixture of that.
I don't think that person exists.
but interestingly enough, now that you say that, is I think Attack on Titan, which I think, thinking from it, about it now, like, I didn't think about this before until you mentioned that about how it's easy to westernize Attack on Titan. This is the kind of show, because of its setting, that you can easily use European actors. You don't need Japanese actors.
Yeah.
I mean, you can actually just do European actors, have British people or something, because technically that's where the movie takes, that's where the show, the world is in there. It's in Western Europe or something. So, let me ask you this. If you have the reins to write the script for this first Attack on Titan movie, what would be your starting point and what would be your drop off point? Like, where would you stop telling the story?
I would probably start with when they are training for being the Jaegers. With a flashback of having brain freeze of the main character. I'm such an idiot.
Aaron,
yeah. You can have the happening of his mother getting eaten and all that. That's a nightmare flashback. There we go on that. And you have sort of a him training meet there, so getting at the end fighting the Armored Titan. And no spoilers on who it is here, because Michael hasn't seen that before, but I would probably go from the training to the Armored Titan and make it a 2-4. I would go start with a training axis. And I would end it with sort of a fight against the armored titan. No, sorry, female titan. Sorry.
Okay. Well, what I'm thinking is, it's so funny because you actually said my beginning verbatim. That's the same thing that I was thinking. Like, you can start with the return of Colossal for the first time, where he breaks the wall again, but they're already grown up and they're dispatched. And throughout this dispatch, Aaron is having flashbacks of what happened a couple of years ago and when he lost his mother and all that. And then that way, 45 minutes in this conflict, you can have the first Aaron transformation without waiting too long.
I mean, everyone here have seen the Edward Holton Hulk, right? Edward Norton, sorry. They have the sort of the ground story and how he became Hulk in the credit scene.
The opening credits.
Yeah, the opening credits. And I sort of think that you could use the same thing for, if you don't want it to be a flashback, sort of have an opening credit, show it a bit. I think because if you see that small bit, and he act like he has a grudge, and you know why, because he talks about his mother, and you have him do all that. Oh, then remember, they show that in the opening credits. You get what I'm saying?
Now, no, I get perfectly, but for some reason, I don't think it would work for Attack on Titan, mainly because of where, because we're introducing a foreign character to pop American culture.
Okay, good point. Good point.
You know, it works for the Hulk because everybody and their grandmother and their grandmother's neighbor know who the Hulk is. But not only that, remember, you've had Hulk in the comics, you have Hulk in the movies. More importantly, specifically for that era where that movie came out, and the Hulk, Bruce Banner, that movie tries to emulate, you had that 1970s Bill Bixby series.
Right.
Good point.
Which is something that everybody... So being that you're introducing Attack on Titan for the first time, I would actually say, if you keep the flashbacks at a minimum and just emphasize on the mystery of Eren's anger and just build that through the story and make that mystery as you discover his motivation to destroy all Titans and how that drives him when he becomes a Titan up to the point where he faces Fino, you can make that his motivation throughout the whole first part of the movie and then just digest that idea that his mother was eaten. Maybe even have an auxiliary character tell the story, not even Eren. You know what I mean?
And
I think I agree with you. Like, if they can make that first movie, if they organize it right, either with the revelation of female or at least just the seal sealing that wall, that first wall that they seal, I think that would be perfect. But it's so hard because I'm thinking, time-wise, it's going to be a long movie.
Yeah, it needs to be about 2:30 minimum, I feel.
Yeah.
This isn't a movie that you can tell in about a half and a 30 or something.
Right. And it makes me think, if you break the story even further, but here, now, there's me singing praise before. I know we have to move to the topics, but what do you think, Isaac and Michael? I know you've watched some of the shows. This might be one of those rare anime properties that, being that horror is at its core, if they just use the horror and gore element as the driving factor of the story, you can kind of get away with doing a shorter movie and just exploring the horror aspect more than anything. And then build a story from there. And then probably in the sequel, go more into the story details.
I get what you mean.
Yeah, that can actually work, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have people surviving runaway from Titans. And then, like, you can even make it... Because at the end of the day, you're going to cut stuff off. You can even make it, like... The movie can end... It can end on a cliffhanger with Colossal arriving, I would even say. Or it can end with the first transformation and them surviving. Because the thing is that what makes the drama, because I'm thinking right now, and here's the problem of what the anime runs into. You have to pick a chunk of story and choose to tell that chunk and only that chunk. And with an anime of this magnitude that's still going, like, it's still, I don't know, Mike, I don't know if you know this, but Attack on Titan currently, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Isaac, season 3 ended in episode 38?
The first half of season 3 ended there, yes, but the second part of season 3 is coming out this spring.
Okay, so it's going to be probably up to 56, right? Something like that?
sort of.
More or less. So gotcha. the manga right now is in chapter 110.
And the manga's still running.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but it's closing.
It's starting to close, but it's one of those things that you have to, if you pick what you need, the story that you need to tell, Attack on Titan can even be the movie that you decide to end the show or end the movie series without necessarily finishing the Titan problem.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's one of those weird ones. It's one of those weird ones.
I have a question then. So would it be better to make an original story set in the Attack on Titan world or universe instead of adapting anything from the mangas?
I don't think that would work. I don't think that would work. Sure, you could.
Go ahead.
I mean, it could be a good story, but I think it could be sort of like, how should I put it? Do a Captain America movie, and the Captain America... you say that in the title, that's it's a Captain America movie, and it's all about Peggy Carter. Because when fans thinks about Attack on Titans, they also think about Eren, Mikasa, and all the other characters. So I don't.
Yeah, that's not necessarily what I meant. I meant, like Captain America, like use that as an example. Civil War was not the comic book Civil War. So would it be easier to loosely base it off of a story and do your own thing with it?
It could be, if it just keeps with the essence of the story.
I think what makes it hard, and the reason why I have to agree to a degree, I have to agree with Isaac in the sense of how difficult it would be, is because we, for example, me and Isaac have read the manga almost up to where it is right now. So we've seen this story being fleshed out throughout. And the thing is that it's one of those mystery stories. It's a mystery. You know, have you heard the terminology that J.J. Abrams is a director that tells a story as a mystery box? Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
Yeah, he tells stories. So Attack on Titan is a mystery box show. It's a mystery box manga. That when you think that you've found out the mystery, you find another box. And that's why it's so hard. And the way that, and the writing for the characters is so good that you cannot, even for side characters, you cannot excise them and make the story work, because a lot of times they're pivotal. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things that if they were gonna do, let's say a standalone Attack on Titan, and it's gonna be a standalone story or an original story, It needs, I honestly don't know. It needs to completely disregard the idea that you have a human that turns into a titan. Because as soon as you introduce that, which technically is the backbone of the mystery, that opens a wormhole of possibilities that you need to explore. Unless you want to leave everybody wanting more or pissed. You know what I mean?
Good
because
point.
there's so much to tell. But I feel like, remember, they make the story of the Titans appearing and this village of people just surviving the attacks of the Titans and developing these Omni gear to survive, and it's all about their survival with the mechanical ability, then that's interesting. Because it is interesting. Because like the first two episodes, you have these humans losing people just trying to take where they can, because these monsters are roaming and just discovering that. But what makes it an anime is when it embraces fantasy and you have a man turning into a titan. That's what makes it work. That's why it's so hard to not do those elements and just choosing some elements and disregarding others, because they also intertwine, which at the same time tells you how well written the story is. That you can't really take one thing apart because it falls apart. Because another thing that I think we're going to talk about when we get to My Hero Academia later, Attack on Titan is one of those few shows that has never been bad. It has been consistently good and engaging. You know what I mean? It's not like Naruto, that 75% is amazing, everything else is filler. You know what I mean? Like, Attack on Titan has been on point with every single chapter. It's never been boring. It's been interesting. It's been scary, non-stop, just like My Hero Academia. nobody can tell me one episode of My Hero Academia that didn't keep you engaged, interested, or push the story forward in a way that was satisfying. It's one of those rare shows that if you really don't pay off what it's about, mm-hmm. you're going to lose the title.
Yeah.
So are we ready for some FAO?
Yes. So Sword Art Online was picked up by Netflix in early 2018. It's a project that's been in development for about almost 3 years now, but Netflix decided to pick it up. It's keeping in line with them getting Death Note and Bleach and Cowboy Bebop. I know nothing about this series, so Brandon, you want to take it from here?
Didn't, just a quick note before you started, wasn't it ABC that had a show first before it?
So yeah, I think it was Sci-Fi that originally was going to do it, but I'm really happy that Netflix grabbed it, because in spite of the horrors of Full Metal Alchemist, Bleach was actually very, very successful. And I think this is one of those few animes that for you to be able to really grasp how good it is, they made the right choice in making a show.
Brandon, let's remember though that Netflix didn't produce in either Fullmetal Alchemist or Bleach. It was a Japanese movie companies. I can't remember which one for each, but Netflix only distributing them. They didn't produce them.
Thank you for protecting Netflix, but Netflix allowed my eyes to burn in pain while watching Fullmetal Alchemist. I blame them. No, you're right. I'm sorry. I digress. Yeah.
They put it out there, right?
Yeah. My life is okay?
Yeah, go on. I was just...
No, you're fine. So Netflix FAO, I think it works perfectly as a series. In a nutshell, Sword Art Online is... the story about 10,000 gamers that they release a virtual reality console, pretty much, that pretty much places the player in a step of a deep coma stasis as they interact in a virtual world where all their senses are intact and they're able to interact, level up. So it's pretty much an RPG, an MMO, a VR MMORPG. Now, when this actual game, and it's like in a medieval knight setting. There's no magic, there's all sword battles and stuff like that, very similar to Final Fantasy. Now, the interesting twist about it is that when these gamers connect to the video game, they find out that there's no logout or sign out button. And it's because the creator of Sword Art Online, or Aincrad, actually erased it and actually locked in every single player that logged in the game. And the only way they can go back to the real world or be released from the game is by completing Sword Art Online or by dying. And the way it works, that if they die in the game, they will die in real life.
Oof.
So in essence, that's the drama about it, where you have all these young kids and adults that have been trapped in this game and how them trying to survive within it. Because if they get killed by a monster, they die in real life. If they get hurt, they know that they're getting hurt, they can recover HP, but if the HP drops to zero, they're actually going to die. So it's all that tension about survival and actually finding people that you can trust. And the intensity of taking a game, treating a game like real life, because you don't know if real life is going to come up afterwards. Because you also see all these people that have been in the game for so long that they don't have faith that they're going to be released, so their life is now virtual, so they can't tell the difference. So it's all that drama. And it's been going on. It has successfully done 4 series so far. It has a very successful animated movie. So it's one of the more popular anime and manga for the last 10 years. So I think it's a good, and I'm really excited for this. And the fact that it's coming to Netflix and it's going to be a show makes it very interesting because being that it's a virtual reality, quote unquote, game world, anybody can play the avatars. So you can actually have your main characters be played by Japanese actors. You can have other characters be played by American actors. So you can have people from different you can have different talented people. And there's not gonna, you can actually change the setting and not, you can make it based in New York, or you have people based in Tokyo, all over the world. So you don't have any issues with whitewashing or anything like that. What you need to focus is telling this story. A lot of people were afraid because they're trying to make the show darker. But it's so funny because even though, like any other anime, there's a lot of scenes in Sword Art Online that are very, I'm gonna say, very light-hearted. This is a dark show. You know what I mean? So I personally don't know why people are freaking out. Like, I know they put Narcos here, but I'm like, if they've seen Sword Art, the second series of Sword Art, it's one of the darkest stories you've seen in Sword Art in a long time. It's about post-traumatic stress disorder, about recovering from traumatic experiences, about gun violence. You know, it's a very good show for our era because it's very synced into the zeitgeist of the times, especially with young teens and people that read stories like we do. So I think it's a great addition to that library that Netflix has been building little by little. And I think it's very interesting how Netflix is going for certain properties that they know are beloved and they know they can exploit as much as possible in the best way. Like for example, and I think this is probably just the first of many that they'll keep on grabbing, because one of the things that a lot of people don't know or know is that Netflix has valued the potential of anime storytelling from the beginning. They've been adapting anime for almost, what, 8 years now? Constantly. You know, and they're making anime, like, right? Like, they've been doing, I think, Seven Deadly Sins for about 3, 4 years old. The first movie they got was Harlock, The Space Pirate. Knights of Sidonia is an original anime from Netflix. So they value the medium. So why not them do this? You know?
Yeah, Netflix is one of the bigger anime supporters for the West, and I thank them for that.
Yeah, Netflix and Hulu have been huge the last few years.
And I think this is gonna be a great show. It's gonna be one of those shows that can surprise a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing about it is that I think they have a pretty good team of people working on this. And you have people that probably know the medium and respect it enough that I have faith that it's gonna be well done. I just hope, and being that the effects budget in Netflix for their movies, it's actually pretty good. Like, I haven't seen this show. I don't know if you guys noticed. One of the producers for a sci-fi show that came on Netflix, Altered Carbon.
I haven't seen that one.
But you've seen like pictures and videos of it, right?
Yeah,
Like on
that I
Netflix.
haven't seen.
So it has a very Blade Runner-esque tone to it and feel for it. Those effects and those ambiance look very good. Well, if I'm not mistaken, the producer for Altered Carbon is one that's producing Sword Art. So they have the aesthetic down. They can make that work. So.
And Sword Art is also one of the animes I think can't work as a live action movie because it's so much to do. It's even more than Attack on Titans, which is why I think a live action show is better.
No, and the cool thing about Sword Art also is that you can actually play via of reality. Like, this is the kind of show that, in a way, you can get away with doing a sort of CG fantasy like feel whenever they're in the game world, and then shoot it in real life when they're in the real world. Like, you can get away with that distinction. And even though it doesn't look amazing, it looks kind of gamey, it's okay because that's the idea. Like, they can get away with that aesthetic and make it work in their favor.
It's like in Civil War when they de-aged Tony Stark. They were able to get away with it because it's a computer program. Same thing here.
You don't like Civil War, do you, Mike? You
Oh, I
kind of
love
toss
Civil War.
a lot of. Okay, cool. Like, that's like your point of reference for this year. Like, so Civil War.
First time we were talking about Captain America. Second time it was just relevant.
You're right. Fair enough. I got my eye on you, Mike.
Isaac, you got anything else to add on Sword Art?
No, I haven't seen that much about Sword Art. I should pick it up, but there are so many episodes on it. So I don't know where to start, especially with everything else I want to watch.
You can't use that as an excuse if you're trying to get me to watch all of these.
Now, though, the cool thing about Sword Art, though, is that the way the show is built, each season has two 12-episode arcs. So you can actually watch them 12 episodes at a time and just take breaks on them.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, if someone wants to see the potential of serious anime storytelling, one of the best arcs in all of anime that I have seen is that first series, is that first arc. The first 12 episodes of Series 2 of Sword Art is amazing. I highly recommend it. And right now I'm watching the newest one, which is Alicization. That's really very good.
Nice. Speaking of which, though, you know another great series? Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Space Cowboy.
Netflix also picked up Cowboy Bebop last year, which is going to be amazing. They already ordered 10 episodes, and it's going to begin production later on this year. They also got Shinichiro Watanabe to be the consultant for the series, the original director.
Yes.
And Christopher Yost, writer of Thor Ragnarok, will be writing the first episode. So what are you guys' thoughts on that one?
Thank Naga that Watanabe is a consultant. What are you laughing about?
No, thank Naga, it was amazing. I love it.
I'm a Fire Emblem.
It's not a bad laugh, it's a good laugh.
I'm a Fire Emblem geek, of course I'm using that expression. Anyway, because Watanabe is arguably the key figure on why the anime adaptation worked as good as it did, because that man is an incredible director when it comes to these types of storytelling, and I feel that while the show is rather, how should I put it, it has a Western flair to it with how it's written. You can feel Japanese storytelling in it. It's like how should I put it? If an American writes an anime that's set in Japan, you will notice the American flares in it. You get what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the actual, you feel that nuance of Japanese storytelling. Yeah.
And it's sort of the reverse with the Cowboy Bebop. I can sense the Americanized influence of the story, while it certainly have a Japanese touch to it, and that's why I think Watanabe is such an important figure to get as a consultant for this live action show.
Yeah, it feels very Blade Runner, in my opinion. Yeah.
That too, which ironically is Blade Runner is ironically a big part of Japanese culture after that one got released, but that's another story. But I'm a bit questionable about just writing the first episode. I'm not the biggest fan of Ragnarok. Ragnarok. Now I was brain freeze. I thought about Dark World. Never mind.
No, he did Dark World too.
Okay. Then
so it's 50-50.
Then it's. And it's sort of, I have the excuse that it's 2:43 in the middle of the night here. So anyway, I'm a bit torn about if it's the Ragnarok, Jost, then I'm a bit scared that it will be to go on too much on the comedic side, because sure, Eric Cowboy Bebop has light-hearted moment. But if it's on the Dark World Jost, then it will be... I don't know what that was supposed to mean, but I'm conflicted.
We're just going to go with garbage.
Isaac, I understood you perfectly.
Because I would probably... I can't think of any writer on top of my head right now that I would have instead, but I'm looking forward to it, and I'm very excited to see what they are going for it. They are apparently going to be as close to the original source material as possible, about something discussing film did say a couple of while back, so that's comfortable to hear, so to speak. But yeah, I'm rather mixed considering the writer, honestly.
Well, it's just the first episode, so.
Yeah, good point, good point.
Yeah, it's not the entire season.
And if we don't get the original theme song, we riot.
I think the good overshadows the bad in this case. Because the fact that they have Watanabe as a consultant for the duration of the season, it's a big plus for us fans, because I agree with you 100%, Isaac. If it wasn't for Watanabe's visionary directing and the way he developed that show, that anime, it would never have been anything close to what it is. And I think I don't know if you know this or not, but one of the most interesting things that we found out when we were talking in the previous anime podcast that we actually talked about, Cowboy Bebop, is that Cowboy Bebop is actually originally a manga. But everybody, when they talk about Cowboy Bebop, they talk about the anime. They don't talk about the manga. And it's because Watanabe made it what it is. It made it with this directional style, animation style, the way he did action, the way he used music and fusion and blues and mix everything together to make this Cajun mix of great comedic detective goodness. It's one of those weird shows that works because whoever had his hands on it knew what he was doing. So the fact that he's involved, and now that he gave his blessing, you know how you see all these news like, oh, John Comforter said that it's good. I don't care about that. I want him involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we know that Watanabe has the magic touch that made this work. I'm really happy he's involved. I don't know you guys. I'm actually really happy that it's only 10 episodes. Like, they're not stretching this. I'm really happy that I'm going to even say this. I hope they're like 30 to 40 minute episodes. I don't need them to be an hour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The fact that if it goes well, we have more seasons. I just hope that this one is successful, because if it is, then we're definitely getting FAO. And we're definitely going to get other stuff. So I'm excited. I'm nothing but excited about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 10 episodes seem to be a good sweet spot there. It's not the 13 like some of the Netflix Marvel shows where they run like maybe 2 episodes too long.
Yep.
Yeah.
This is right in between, like, Stranger Things. Like, I think episodes for that show is, like, 8 or 9.
Well, the funny thing is that Stranger Things is actually a weird show, because I think the first one has 8 and the second one is 9. Like they know the story they want to tell, and then just run. And I think they just shoot the amount of episodes that they need to tell that story.
Right. That's how it should be.
Right. Because you those that know about TV know that the reason we have 22, 23 episode seasons is because the network requires it, because of ads and stuff like that. But when you have that freedom that Netflix provides, like, for example, the big thing about 13 episodes of Netflix is I think that was part of the deal, that they needed to be 13 episode shows, so they were never really able to move away from that. That was part of the problem that they had. But with these shows, they have carte blanche. They can do whatever they want. So the fact that they made that conscious decision to make it 10 episodes, it sounds good to me.
And the fun thing about you mentioning Blade Runner, Watanabe did the Blade Runner Blackout 2022 short that was released in 2017.
Oh, sweet.
Do you know about those shorts that they did, Michael?
I did not get a chance to catch any of them, but yeah, I know of them.
Yeah, because the cool thing, that was one of the coolest promotional things. You guys saw Blade Runner 24 now, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a story for another day.
That is true. I'm going to shut up now.
No, go ahead. We've got to fill this segment with something, because I think we pretty much stretched thin to the Cowboy Bebop.
No. What I was going to say is that's one of the best pieces of promotional material is that if you go on YouTube, like I think in the last month prior to release of the movie, they released like 4 short films preparing you for the movie that pretty much fill the gaps between Blade Runner 1 and 2.
Yeah,
that's
amazing. And one of those short films is the anime short that Watanabe directed.
That's amazing. Do you guys have any ideas as far as casting or anything for Cowboy Bebop? Because this seems like the one show or movie we've talked about that's really, really going in development right now.
I think film set around the starting film around April, May, right?
Right.
Then I think we could get some casting news about it relatively soon, at latest March. And honestly, I'm going to go out on a big shot, and I do think they're getting... I wouldn't be surprised if Keanu Reeves plays Spike.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised, because he has been attached for as the role of Spike for 20th Century Fox in a live-action movie, because he loves that show. So I could... and he doesn't look like he's, 50 right now? So he could easily pull off Spike if they wanted to. And so I'm going on to limb and say that I think Keanu Reeves is going to be cast for Spike, actually.
You heard it here first, folks.
No, I gotta agree with you. And the best thing about Keanu Reeves is that he has the physical ability to play that character.
Yeah, that too.
Because he does practice martial arts and he still does it. And that's one of the big things about Spike, that he's an expert martial artist. And he's an expert martial artist that's fascinated by Eastern traditions, but it's this broken down hitman. It's a mixture of things that I think Keanu Reeves has already played this role for the longest time. And now he's just going to take all the roles that he's played before, put them together, and bring us Spike.
Space John Wick.
Yeah. Sort of. It would be perfect. Now, so Space John Wick, we got it for Spike. You know who I wouldn't mind what's the name of this guy? For Jet?
No. I don't.
I think he might be a tad too old, but at the same time I see it working. Could you imagine Liam Neeson as Jet?
Yeah, he would be perfect.
Yeah, yes. Right?
And he seemed to accept every role right now, so... He seemed to be in the Morgan Freeman state, so I mean, why not?
Don't insult Liam Neeson like that, man.
Yeah. Hey, it's Liam Neeson. So we got Liam Neeson as Jet, we got Keanu Reeves as Spike. He's going to be Faye Valentine. What do you think? Who would you cast to Faye Valentine, Mike?
I'm still tripping off of the Liam Neeson slander. I can't go right now.
Faye Valentine? Oh, that's a toughie. That's actually a toughie. Oh, I know. Alexandra Daddario.
Alexandra Daddario. What has she done? What has she done recently?
She's the daughter of The Rock in the Earthquake movie.
She could. I can see that.
Obligatory Scarlett Johansson meme.
Nah, man. I think she's staying away from anything remotely related to Japan for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's and you know what's funny? It was a movie of her being in Japan that actually made her famous, in a way. because she did Lost in Translation with Bill Murray when she was starting out as an adult actress.
Yeah, I know.
That's a different story. But you know what? Go ahead.
I don't know who I would cast as Edward, though.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about it. Oh, Edward, you need maybe one of the kids from Stranger Things. I don't know.
Hey, Millie Bobby Brown can play Edward, because I remember Edward's the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, Millie Bobby Brown play Edward. Another enigmatic character for many enigmatic roles.
So we can all agree that we're all excited for Cowboy Bebop, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, awesome. I think we all can agree that we might be excited for this next one. So My Hero Academia is going to be getting a live-action adaptation from Legendary Pictures. So we already had the third season that just wrapped up a few months back. The fourth season is going to start up in October. We also had the movie hit theaters, which did really well. How do you guys feel about My Hero Academia? Because that's an anime that I actually watch, and I cannot see that really working in some aspects.
Considering this is Japan's X-Men, I could easily see that happening. Maybe you should maybe they have to do some liberties with it, in terms of the story.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's easier to do some liberties with this story than something like Attack on Titans, considering the nature of its story. I could easily see this work, actually. It's a perfect story for live-action adaptation, and it's also something that is perfect in today's climate due to the superhero craze with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and now Aquaman getting released and all that jazz.
Yeah, I can see it working. The only thing that kind of concerns me, sort of like Attack on Titan, there's 61 episodes right now in the anime, and I know the manga. How many chapters is that in right now?
Oh, I have lost count.
Exactly. Exactly. So how do you condense that into a 2-hour film? You're going to have to take a lot of liberties there.
Yeah, but like I said, it's not... There isn't a... sure, there are some mysteries in this... In My Hero Academia, but I would argue that they don't have, like Brandon said, the mystery box element to the show, which make it easier to be rather loose with it. You have more liberties with it, which is why I think it's easier to adapt this than Attack on Titans on that aspect. Which is why I don't really have an concern for it. The biggest concern I have is the casting and how they handle certain characters, to be honest.
Yeah, so the entire series is set in Japan. Yeah. Would you want them to try and stick to that, or would you mind if they try and move that to the United States?
I mean, I would prefer it to be in Japan. I would prefer it because. But if they, knowing Hollywood wanting to have it in the U.S. in America just because saving money, then they might as well swift it to America and not using some dumb excuse like, for example, how the Akira movie was said to do it. Like, this is set in the United States, but in a soil that is owned by the Japanese people, and therefore the American youth could live there in Japan and all that. You know what I mean.
Wait, the Akira movie was set in the U.S.?
They were meant to set in U.S., but that land was meant to be owned by Japan in that script, and they would do some strange kind of stuff just to get it work to have an American ethnicity actor playing Akira.
That makes no sense. Wow.
So, So I'm just saying that if this, I would prefer it to be in Japan and have it all set. But if they so feel the need to say, no, we are having it in, we are having a non-Japanese actor and all that, yes. Have it in United States. Don't do the what they were thinking about with Akira.
Yeah, I agree.
No. Because that's something I'm scared that they would do also, just because it's set in Japan. I mean...
Right.
What do you think, Brandon?
Well, I think this is one of those few shows that is perfect, just the way it is. And I think, like you said, I think Isaac, you and I see things very similar for a lot of things. Because whenever I describe My Hero Academia, I say exactly the same thing as X-Men on steroids. And I think what makes this show, and that's funny because this particular show has no reason to feel so fresh and unique, especially in our current pop culture. Like, this show shouldn't work. Right. But the writing is so good, and how they embrace Japanese charm and culture to make it new, that's what makes My Hero Academia work. Apart from the fact that all the characters are extremely lovable. Like, all these characters are very lovable, very relatable. I think that Izuku's journey is one of the most original and refreshing origin stories I've heard in a long time. Which is why I think those first two episodes still, every time I see them, still make me want to cry because they're just so good. And it's so emotional, like that dream and the way they tell that story. I understand why you'd be concerned, Mike, in terms of the length of episodes and all that. And I agree with you also, Isaac, the fact that we don't know how much money they're going to throw into this and how they might want to just make it stateside. But then you're just doing X-Men, and that's stupid.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
Yeah, it's like you don't say you're going to make My Hero Academia and make it in America. If you're going to make My Hero Academia, you're going to make it in Japan, because Japan can be weird, and Japan can be quirky, and people are obsessed for certain things. But that's just the culture. You know what I mean? That's because when you see Izuku Midoriya and the way his obsessive fandom develops, that's not American depiction. That's a Japanese depiction of American of fandom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how Japanese fandom develops. Like, you have people go crazy here, but he's like freaking nuts. Like, but it's awesome because it's relatable to that character. Because the way he expresses his fandom is how we as fans of our own things, we connect with Izuku. That's why he's such a relatable character. Now, in terms of the story, I think what they can do, in my opinion, is you can do every character. You can do probably two or three movies, like a trilogy, and you can end with that final battle with that quote-unquote final battle with All-in-One, All-for-One.
Yeah.
And probably pretty much end it there. All I know is that first movie, what I want in that first movie is a complete and not rushed Izuku origin story, and at least all the way to the point that he gets to that he passes the exam.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah.
If we get that, and maybe towards the end, I could even say that you can end the movie right there, and it'll be perfect. And then, like, in the second movie, you can have the first turmoil, you can do it that ending, I think, for the first season of that attack on the training school.
Yeah, the USJ attack.
Yeah. Start with that and end with the tournament. And then create an or, because that way in the second movie you can tease All for One. and then just make him the villain of the third one, and pretty much close it right there. You don't even have to try and make other movies. You can actually make it work because it gives you enough time to introduce new characters in each movie, but you can at least have Bakugo and Izuku's journey from the beginning, and you can have time with Izuku. Because I'm going to be honest, I love My Hero Academia. Like, I'm exaggerating. It's because I fell in love with the character of Izuku first.
Yeah.
So I want to spend time with Izuku. If I get to spend time with Izuku and they actually take their time with his origin story, I'm going to be honest. I actually demand that they do that origin story beat by beat. I want to see that slushy monster. I want to see him trying to free Bakugo. I want to see him train in the beach. Like, I want to see all that. Give me that, and you have all my money.
Yeah, like you said, you can end that movie with him getting into UA, and I wouldn't even be mad. I don't have to see anybody else.
Yeah, yeah. And you can still call it My Hero Academia because you see the academy at the end.
Right. I mean, he takes the test. Have him take the test in the third act. That's the third act.
Right, right. Right.
Exactly.
And then you set up the mystery of his powers, where at the end of it, when you can actually have him take down the robot and break his arms and legs, and that can be the mystery. Oh, so my body can't take it. So movie number two is him figuring out how to handle that.
Yeah, and you were talking about the tournament arc. How should they skip that entirely? Because I'm not sure how you can get that to work in one or even two movies. Because it's so dense and so many moving parts.
Well, you eliminate characters. You make the classroom smaller. I would even say you can even eliminate Class B and just focus on Class A.
Mm.
And just focus and have them fight against each other. And then I would even say they do that, right? And you can even make, oh man. You know what? Now you're making me think, because in movie two, you have two great options. You can do a full tournament arc, which would be very Japanese. or, come on, every good show has a tournament arc, okay?
Yeah, I'm not arguing with that. That's so
so you can even go the Japanese route into the tournament. Or you can make Slain the villain.
Right.
Make Slain the villain. So, and those are two big options. You know what? You can even, you're actually right. You can probably skip the tournament altogether.
But then you run into a problem of Todoroki's arc leads into the Stain arc.
You know what? You better stop screaming at me, okay? No, but you're right. You're entirely right. It's hard.
These are the things that are going in my head, and I'm like, how are you going to make this work? Because you have great options, but none of them could be as good as the manga or the anime.
Well, I think that's one of those situations where you probably have to go original. Well, because, and here's one of the things. I think the best blueprint that they can do is they have to follow the example of the movie.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the My Hero Academia movie?
I did, yes.
I haven't, because I haven't gotten released on here in Sweden yet, and I'm so freaking pissed off about it. No,
it comes on Blu-ray in March, I think, so you'll get it soon.
But yeah, like that is a great, that was a great story arc, but they already introduced characters. I think you can make any story work, or you can make any choice that works, because one of the things that I think that movie proved is that you can make any story, you can make any arc work within 2 hours, as long as you've taken the time to establish the characters. Because the only reason that movie works so well is because we all love all the characters that we've known since season one. Because if you notice, they only introduce, what, two new characters or that matter in that movie? Or three?
Yeah, three.
All the other ones are characters. You know what I mean? So you can actually, as long as you take, like, for example, you can actually focus on the main characters, and you can probably introduce Urahara, or I forget her name, But her and all those people, like during the tests and stuff like that, you can even do a time jump to a degree towards the second movie and have them be in school for a while. Maybe the tournament happened, or it's the, or you can even start with the end of the tournament or something like that. I don't know. There's a way, brother. There's a way.
Isaac, you got anything to add?
I have nothing more to add. You are pretty much said what needs to be said about that.
All right. So with that said, My Hero Academia is coming back for season 4 in October. Are there any other shows you guys are interested in or want to talk about before we close?
Yeah, I mean, we do have the part 2 of Titan season 3 coming up in the spring. And yes, I promise that I will be finishing the reviews before then. And then we have the One Punch Man season 2 as well. But I was just thinking, why not mention some other animes that maybe aren't on the radar for everyone else? And I have a couple that I can mention.
Oh, nice.
The first one is called Magmel of Sea Blue, which is a fantasy series. It's a fantasy series taking place in a world where a new continent named Magmel suddenly appears in the ocean and a new age of exploration begins. Explorers venture to the island to find previously unknown life forms and resources, but experience one disaster after another. The manga follows the mysterious young men who make a living as relief workers who aid the explorers, which I think could be an interesting pick. It's coming out this spring, and it's made by Studio Pierrot. I don't know how many episodes it is. It doesn't really stand on Anime Planet, but it feels like something that could be worth looking out for. Another one I'm thinking. This is for you that want something more on the insane area. One day, three second-year middle school students, Kazuki Yasaka, Toji Kuji, and Entai Jinai, meet a kappa-like creature named Kepi, who is the self-proclaimed heir on the throne of Kappa Kingdom. Kepi forcibly takes the students' Shirikodama, which is a mythical organ Kappa steals through their a-hole, and they are transformed into a Kappa. Kepi informs them that if they want to return to their former self, they want to connect in that way, and they must bring him the Shirikodama of zombies. And the show is going to focus on the kids trying to become themselves again while being in this Kappa form. And this feels like something that could be on the more insane side for those that want just the Kappa part alone. And then we have, I don't know what studio is a part of that. Let me check. It doesn't stand anything about that. And a third one is made by Production IG, who is known for Neon Genesis Evangelion, among other things. So we know how they are when they do some certain shows. The Issa, it's a Sherlock Holmes adaptation, but set in Japan, and it said, the east side of Shinjuku Ward, in Leon Light Kabuki Show District, stretches across the center of this chaotic city. Where the line shines, there is also deep shadows. The curtain rises on this night stage where bizarre murders occurred. Is this suspense? No. Comedy? An instinctual drama is about to begin. And it's, like I said, Sherlock Holmes set in Japan. And that could be something, and it's releasing spring this year. And the last one I have is called Robihashi, and that's this one is made by Studio Comment, and it's about two guys that is different from each other. One is a former debt collector and a working for a loan shark, and the other one, he doesn't stand what he's working with, but they're saying that they are sort of split, sort of their themselves opposite, but they decide that they're going to look for Iskandar, which is a distant and legendary planet in the Milky Way that's said to bring happiness to those who go there. And that sounds... it reminds me sort of an older 80s, 90s anime. I can't remember the name off on the top of my head. It's I can mention it later if I can recall it. Brandon, do you have anything you can call out for that could be worth looking for?
Well, the first thing that I would say is the one that, and I think is because it's going to happen very, very soon, is one of my favorite anime ever. It's a certain anime called Psycho Pass. Psycho Pass is in a future where crime is prevented by the government's overview of people's emotional hues and psychos and psychosomatic status using the civil system and how the cops work around cases preventing crime by arresting people before crime is committed due to their emotional and psychological state. And there's exploration of how this can work to benefit society or against the benefit of society. And it's a very, there's a lot of good twists and police work detective storytelling, which I love. So Psycho Pass finished probably a couple, 2-3 years ago with the last series and the movie that came out. So last year they announced that they're going to be releasing a film trilogy throughout the whole of 2019. And the first movie actually premieres on the 25th of this month. So it's a brand new trilogy called The Sinners of the System. And the first one comes out on the 25th. The second and the other ones still have a to-be-declared date. But they're all going to be based on secondary characters throughout the storyline of series 1 and 2. So they're going to be original stories within the same world. I'm just excited that the third one is going to bring back Kogami and hopefully bring his arc for Sloker, because those that know the first series know that he's one of the better characters of the show. He actually made that series 1 very, very, very unforgettable. So I'm mostly excited, mostly about that. And I'm actually looking forward to spend my anime repertoire. So I'm actually going back to the vault and looking at different anime that draw my attention. So I'm toying with the idea of watching Sword Art again because I just love that show. But I'm probably gonna start watching The Gray Man. It looks very interesting. And I've been thinking of revisiting Trigun as well, which is another classic.
Yeah, Trigun is classic.
Yeah, Wild West fantasy show. That would actually work in the movie amazingly, by the way.
Yeah.
Trigun is one of those. Trigun is, and I think for that's one of the things I love about anime. Depending on what you're looking for, there's something for everybody, because you have those animes like One Piece that don't care about humanity or life expectancy, but actually survive the people that watch it because they're an episode 2 million.
That show is going to get the live action show, but that's for another episode. I can rant about it for 40 minutes alone.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. And then, but the cool thing about shows like Trigun, shows like Death Parade, shows like Psycho Pass, because their episode count is so minimal, and it's minimal on purpose because they just focus on the story they want to tell, they work perfectly for adaptation. And they work perfectly for people that just want to see what anime is about. So definitely, if anyone's looking for something simple, something to push your feet in for anime and stuff like that, Trigun is excellent. It's only 26 episodes, but it's awesome. Full Metal Alchemist is 68 episodes, but it's actually very good.
Brotherhood. The first one is like 12 episodes long with an original ending. isn't it? I think it was 12.
No. Full Metal Alchemist is around 50 to 60 episodes. It's pretty long.
Is it? I was pretty sure it was. Pretty sure it was 12. Okay, I'm misremembering that. Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, some animes are freakishly short.
Yeah, like Fully Cooly is only 6 episodes, like the original one. But yeah, there's a lot of anime out there. Explore, send us messages on what you're watching, because, I mean, I am not a connoisseur and a guru like Your Highness Isaac Dr. Wolf, because he watches so much anime that I will never be able to compete, but there's a lot of stuff out there. There's something for everybody. And there's a lot of stuff coming in the future, and I think 2019 is going to be an awesome year.
And if you want to watch some anime that every anime fan should watch, even though you probably are going to get insane afterwards, then you see Evangelion. Just don't drink while you do it.
Hey, now that you mentioned that, and I know this is purely off topic, but I can't wait till we finish the podcast. I'm going to do this live. Isaac, I've been trying to find where to watch Evangelion.
It's going up on Netflix. It's going up on Netflix this year.
Oh, I'm glad. Because it's just one of those shows that I know it's like the most classic of classics. And
but it has given me nightmares, to say the least. I might know what I'm talking about.
Okay, let's do it.
Especially the movie End of Evangelion. It made me go for a while.
We legit questioned if we needed to review this on the website.
So what we need to do for future podcasts is, when it comes out, I'll binge it, I'll watch it, and then once I'm completely messed up, we'll actually do a live commentary of certain episodes and just explain why it's just so bad and so crazy.
You know what? I'm up for it.
I only agree if we do Two Heroes After Palette Cleanser.
Yes.
If I can get access to that movie, I can do that one.
Deal.
Yes. Yes.
All right, guys. We ready to wrap up?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Brandon, thanks for coming. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter, on Lexan, at Lexan Alvarado. That's LEXAN, at Lexan Alvarado. I'm a solid fan. You can also find all my Flash-related theories, comments and thought pieces, movie reviews, and anime snapshots on RevengeOfTheFans.com, which is a very good friendly site. We love people at Woban, and we work together a lot with you guys. So you can find me at RevengeOfTheFans.com.
Yeah, we're going to have to get you on to talk to Flash one day.
Oh, yeah.
Isaac, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter as at Emblemaniac. Yeah, that's about it.
You can also find Isaac doing tons of anime reviews. Bam, Entertainment.
Yeah, I thought you meant social media. But yeah, you can find me writing at with mostly anime-related stuff. Reviews, opinions, and such as well.
And you can find me at MTJR_15 on Twitter. Also reviewing Arrow and a bunch of other stuff on WebamEntertainment.com. You can check out the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your podcasts. So thank you guys for supporting the show. We'll catch you next time with any more anime news we have coming up in the future. See you later.
See ya.
See you.
You've been listening to the Wabam Entertainment Podcast. For more from Wabam Entertainment, visit us on the web at wabamentertainment.com. You can let us know what you thought of this episode on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WabamENT. Thanks for listening. We'll see y'all next time.